You're listening to Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno, supported by Homewatch Caregivers, whose mission is to preserve dignity, protect independence, and provide peace of mind for their clients and loved ones by providing exceptional home care.
97.9 FM WCHL is pleased to present Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno. Nicole has over 15 years of experience as a geriatric social worker and administrator, working in the long-term care industry to include skilled nursing care, Alzheimer's care, adult daycare, and home care. She also worked as a family caregiver. In addition, Nicole co-founded a nonprofit in the Triangle that specializes in support for caregivers. Now, Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno.
Welcome to this edition of Caring Connections. This is Nicole Bruno, your host. Today, I have the pleasure to be speaking with Donna Rebiner, Jewish Family Services Director. Thank you for coming so much today.
Thank you for having me.
And we are going to be talking about caring for a loved one with dementia. And, you know, as many times as we talk about Alzheimer's and dementia on the show, it is just such a popular topic. And every guest that we bring in just brings in a different slant and some different gems for people to take home. So I so appreciate you coming to us today and giving us your knowledge.
Thank you.
So you brought with you some of the top 10 things that people don't know and probably should, just in general about caregiving and Alzheimer's and dementia. And I just thought I would highlight a few of those. And, you know, this is a very common misconception that Medicare pays for the cost of long-term care.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's something that's not widely discussed, but until a family needs help for their loved one. And then they're often shocked to find that Medicare is really an acute care benefit that just pays for rehabilitation after a hospital stay.
Right. So it's more of that skilled type need.
Yes.
For sure. Wonderful. While only 35% of all Americans believe that they will need long-term care, in actuality, over two-thirds of all Americans over the age of 65 will need long-term care at some point during their lives. That's a shocking number.
It is a shocking number. Now, it depends on how long you live, obviously.
Yeah.
The longer you live, the more likely you are to need long-term care, but it's not something that is unlikely to affect your family.
Interesting. So this doesn't mean that they're going to permanently stay. It might mean that maybe they're in rehab for a short amount of time or something like that, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. The next one I wanted to highlight was just because your parents has Alzheimer's disease, it does not mean that you will have it.
Right. Now, there is a genetic component, but it is not the only way you get Alzheimer's disease. And as we all know, there's no cure for Alzheimer's, but there's really not much at this point we can do to prevent it. People just generally say good cardio health.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. They say what's good for your heart's good for your brain, don't they?
Exactly.
And that's true. And, you know, as a society, we just, especially in America, we are just, they call it that we're the brown eaters. We just eat all those low carbs and we just,
exactly.
High carbs and all the saturated fat. And none of those things are good for our heart. That means it's not good for our brain. Okay, so, you know, this is a topic that is just on so many people's mind. I lead support groups in the community, and, you know, this is just one question that people ask me over and over and over again, and I'd love to hear some of your insight on this. When is it time to move a loved one into a care facility?
This is one of the most difficult decisions a family member will make, and we recommend that people have lots of conversations both with the loved one and also with their family, first of all, because it's not something you're going to decide quickly. What I usually recommend to families is that they look for changes in their loved one in terms of both physical and mental changes over time.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a temporary change if you're coming back from the hospital and you may have had a drug interaction or some type of reaction that does go away. And so that wouldn't be cause for alarm unless it's over a period of time. But again, over time, you should watch for symptom changes. And if they're major changes that are decline in function and the family can't take care of the loved one, it is time to start researching options.
Definitely. I would agree. And I think sometimes, though, it would be good to have these decisions earlier on in the process versus when there's a crisis. I speak that mantra all the time. However, I will be the first one to tell you I cannot have that conversation with my parents. They will not let me. With all the skills that I have and the knowledge and all the resources I know, anytime I bring it up, I get, what are you trying to kill me?
Exactly. They're very difficult difficult conversations
they are,
to have.
They are.
Often it's easier to start when talking about another friend or a neighbor who's gone through the process and
Definitely.
Make it a little less distant for them.
Definitely. Or get the physician involved. Or sometimes that third party. As a child, it can be hard to approach parents.
Absolutely.
You know, and reverse those roles a little bit. So great. Great one to start off with. How do caregivers avoid getting angry at loved ones with dementia? That is so true. You know, I have to say, you know, I think we would be all fooling ourselves if we sat here and said caring for mom or dad or aunt or uncle or friend with Alzheimer's disease 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is a complete joy. There are those hate moments. There are those resentful moments. There are those, I can't believe I got myself into this moment. So how can we avoid getting angry, or can we not really avoid that?
It's very hard. It's very, very hard. We run a few support groups at the Jewish Family Services as well, and we try to always remind people that getting angry at your loved one will not help the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we always recommend that you try to diffuse the anger. You try to either redirect the person, you try to bring up a different topic, sometimes use humor. But the best thing to do is try to figure out why that person's angry,
mm-hmm.
what triggered the anger, so that you can avoid it in the future. But getting angry back never works. So I always say, please don't do that if you can avoid it, even though it's very hard in the moment
mm-hmm.
to have the presence to just step away from the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when you have to leave the room, you know, if that's the best solution for you.
Take a time out yourself.
Take a time out.
Definitely. Because, you know, that anger is a very normal and natural feeling if you're faced with all day long, what time is it? 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 What time it is? And sometimes you just can't take it. So
exactly.
Taking breaks yourself, those coping mechanisms, some of the other shows that we've done is how to care for yourself as a caregiver, all very, very important so you don't burn out.
Exactly. And the other thing to remember is they're not doing it on purpose.
That's right.
And that's really important to recognize.
They cannot help it.
They can't help it.
Wonderful. So how do caregivers set limits with their loved ones? And this is that great question. You know, I think because this is a huge issue, even in the support groups that I run, enabling is a huge issue for people, you know, and they just feel bad. Well, mom ran out of milk now, so I have to get milk. Now tomorrow, mom ran out of bread, so now I have to get bread. And, you know, even those simple little things, you know, how do we set limits without hurting our loved ones' feelings?
It's very hard for particularly spousal caregivers to do this if it's not part of what the relationship was with the loved one. And so what we usually say is be gentle with yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
recognize what you can do and what you can't. What's a reasonable expectation?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing, to, you know, be reasonable about what their own capacity is. And then to start with something very small. So it's like baby steps. You start with something small. If they, you know, if someone asks you to do something right away and it's not a good time to do it, you just try to say no gently. Ask for help. That's another
mm-hmm.
thing that caregivers tend not to do, to ask for the help they need and be very specific. We ask people to write down a list of what they need help with and also to be gentle with the people who help them. They may not do it exactly the same way you do it,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. But do ask for the help you need and be realistic about both what you can do and what others can do for you.
Wonderful. Well, we are going to take a quick break. I'm here today with Donna Rabiner from Jewish Family Services, and we are talking about caring for a loved one and yourself as a caregiver, but also caring for loved ones with dementia, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections, and today I'm with Donna Rabiner from Jewish Family Services, and she is the director there. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we were just really getting into the meat and potatoes of caregiving and caregiving for someone with Alzheimer's and dementia and just some of those skills and techniques that you need to be successful. What I would love to talk a little bit about, and, you know, it just seems that there are just more and more caregivers out there and more caregivers that are overwhelmed. How do caregivers get the help that they need in caring for a loved one?
Well, most of the time, caregivers don't even identify as caregivers. They just think, I'm taking care of my husband because I got married to him and
it's
I have
a vow.
To do this.
Yes.
It's a vow. Yeah. So they don't even really identify as caregivers or even recognize often when they have needs. So the first thing to do is to have them, you know, be open to the idea of getting help
mm-hmm.
and recognizing that they do have limits and that they can't do everything for that loved one 24/7. Every day, every week. And so what we ask them to do is sort of sit down and think about the things that they think someone else could do for them, whether it's grocery shopping or making a meal or taking their spouse to a doctor's appointment, and to be very concrete and to actually practice asking it. Because I know that sounds silly, but a lot of times people just are embarrassed to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sort of let go of it, let it go, and recognize that someone else may not do it the way you would, but it's still going to be a help to you. And as long as it gets done, it doesn't have to be the way you would do it.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Your perfect way. Yeah, that's really hard. And, you know, I think one of the things that caregivers really struggle with, myself included, is, you know, that losing that sense of control, you know, just giving up those little pieces and then sitting back during that time when the loved one is with someone else, not wondering and worrying what's going on every moment, to sort of decompress and take that time for yourself. That can be very hard.
Absolutely.
How about, you know, and this is such a huge issue, especially in this area, you have a lot of transplanted people here. How can caregivers be helpful to loved ones when they live far away?
Yeah, this happens quite a bit. We get calls almost every day about this. And it's tricky when a loved one lives far away. If they have a relative that lives close to the parent and they have a good working relationship, it's always ideal that they stay in very close touch and try to learn about the disease or whatever the illness is and how they can be helpful to the loved one who's taking care of the person. If there isn't a local relative, it's harder. They have to then sort of learn about the resources in the community as well as the disease and figure out how they can be helpful. I always recommend that out of town people come and visit as often as possible, mm-hmm. because you really, there's no substitute for seeing yourself, the decline in your parent, and how you can be helpful. But learning about the resources and the disease process are critical, speaking to the physician if you can. Mm-hmm. And then often what we do ask folks who live out of town is if they can't give hands-on care, maybe they can give financial assistance to the other family members, or at least provide a break for other family members to get away, which we call a respite.
Wonderful. Those are really great tips and tricks. So switching back to Alzheimer's disease here. This is a very hard process. It's, you know, from what I've witnessed in my career so far, the saddest part of the disease for the person with the disease, it seems to be in the beginning stages when they really realize they're not remembering things and they're really struggling with that isolation and, you know, just trying to stay away from people because they know there's something wrong. And then for the family members, the real struggle seems to be when the loved one doesn't remember who they are anymore and, you know, they're just slowly grieving for the person while they're still alive. They're just losing little bits and pieces and they're watching that process. What changes should caregivers expect to see in a loved one with Alzheimer's disease? How do you prepare yourself for that?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. There are so many different ways to define the progression, but the simplest way is to look at the early stages and the middle stages and then the later stages. So again, knowledge is power, so we always recommend that families learn as much about the disease process, talk to their physician and each other. At the early stages, it may not be that obvious to people who don't see the relative that often that there's actually been a change. Mm-hmm. But typically, they'll have trouble remembering little things. The valuables will get lost or misplaced. There may be some trouble with managing finances. They may start asking the same question multiple times. But again, to someone who doesn't see them regularly, they may just be little quirks in their personality. But this is the beginning of the disease process, and it can take anywhere from 0 to 7 years. It's a very slow progression. Mm-hmm. At the middle stages, more difficulties arise. And this is what we say, people are trying to make sense of the world. They have trouble doing their activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. They may, you know, not remember if they showered or not. They may start forgetting the names of loved ones. And this is a particularly painful time, as you said, for family members. At the very end of the disease process, things really decline for the person and they may need 24/7 care. Mm-hmm. They may not be able to swallow or speak, and certainly they can't take care of themselves. Mm. But it's a very long process. It can take anywhere from 10 to 15 or 20 years.
But Alzheimer's is terminal. I mean, if you have Alzheimer's, as long as, you know, you could die from heart disease before you die from Alzheimer's, but if all you have is Alzheimer's, I mean, in the end, that's what gets you.
Right. But very often, it's actually other things that do kill you, like infectious disease or pneumonia.
Yeah. Okay. So other types of dementia.
Yeah, this is interesting. Many family members are now getting more familiar with Alzheimer's because there's been so much media coverage of it. And it is the most common form of dementia, but it is not the only form. And one of the things that I like to tell family members is often your loved one may not only have Alzheimer's, they may have another type, or they may have different types that are not Alzheimer's. So some of the other types are worth learning about because they're identifiable in a different way. One of the more common ones is called vascular dementia. And this happens to folks who either have a stroke or a loss of blood flow to the brain. And there's a sudden change in ability. So instead of the very slow progression with Alzheimer's, we call this a stepwise downward progression, where people may be functioning at a pretty high level, and then they have a stroke, and suddenly their memory really declines. And that could be the result of vascular dementia. frontal temporal lobe dementia is a type of dementia that often affects younger people, and it is the impulse control loss. And these are people who suddenly tell dirty jokes at inappropriate mm-hmm. times and do some sexually explicit mm-hmm. things. They may take off their clothes and not think anything of it. They just don't have that impulse control anymore. Mm-hmm. And then Lewy body dementia is another type that is associated often with Parkinson's disease. And these folks have trouble with movement, stiffness. They often have day-night cycle sleep problems. And there's wide variability in their performance.
Those are pretty much the top.
Those are the other top
types. They make
up
the majority of the dementias out there, for
sure.
They
do.
Okay. And lastly, before we take our break, how would you say caregivers can cope with the ups and downs of caregiving, whether it's caregiving for a person with Alzheimer's or caregiving with just a frail elder or someone with a chronic condition? How do we do that?
It's very difficult. I think the best thing to do with family members is to let them know that there will be these wild changes from day to day, depending on the type of dementia their loved one has, and that this is normal. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you have a good day, it doesn't mean that the disease process is gone, that bad days will return. I always say plan for the future because the disease will not get better. Mm-hmm. Most diseases progress and get worse, and that it's very good to make plans. Recognize the joys of every day, but also plan for the future.
Okay, well, we are going to take a quick break. I'm here today with Donna Rabiner, Jewish Family Services Director, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections, and today I have the pleasure to be speaking with Donna Rabiner, Jewish Family Services Director, and we are talking about caring for a loved one with dementia and caring for yourself as a caregiver. Okay, so in the last few minutes of the show here, I think you brought with you some great resources, and I thought I would just highlight a few of them for those tech-savvy people out there. If you want to go ahead and Google Family Caregiver Alliance, which is the National Center on Caregiving, Donna recommends that website because?
It's a wonderful resource. It not only talks a lot about different resources in the community, but also it gives you a lot of knowledge of the different diseases and where to go to for help. And it's evidence-based, so a lot of the suggestions they make have been tested in other communities and found successful.
And to Donna's point about evidence-based, again, you know, caregivers out there listening to us today, be very careful where you go online because you can find, there's so much information. You can find information that'll take you a lifetime to read, but definitely try to find sites that are linked and tested and evidence-based for sure, because otherwise it can send you on a whole different path. Next one was the National Alliance for Caregiving. What are we going to find there?
This is a very nice website, and it's a nonprofit coalition of organizations focusing on family caregiving. It's a little more user-friendly and grassroots-oriented, a little less public policy-oriented, but family members seem to really enjoy looking on that site.
And the last one I thought we would highlight today is the Alzheimer's Association.
This is a great overall website for family members to learn not only about Alzheimer's disease, but other dementias. It has top tips on how to deal with a loved one, things to look for, myths. It's very, very useful.
And tell us a little bit more about Jewish Family Services.
So Jewish Family Services is a nonprofit organization. We're in Durham, Chapel Hill, and we serve the Durham and Chapel Hill community. And we don't just serve older adults. We serve families and adults of all ages. But we provide caregiver support groups for loved ones, so we recommend that anyone who's interested to give me a call at 919-354-4922 or drabiner, R-A-B-I-N-E-R, at shalomdch.org. We also have a memory cafe program, which is a great program for couples to come together, where one of the people does have dementia of some type, and the other one is the caregiver. And we do a fun activity and some exercises, and we offer some tips for loved ones and taking care of someone with dementia.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Today, I had the distinct pleasure to be speaking with Donna Rabiner, Jewish Family Services Director, and we talked about caring for a loved one with dementia and how to care for yourself as a caregiver. As always, you may email your caring questions to caring@1360wchl.com. Thank you so much and have a wonderful day.
The purpose of Caring Connections is to educate listeners to help improve the quality of life for families, for professional caregivers, as well as those people affected with Alzheimer's disease.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno is supported by HomeWatch Caregivers. You can hear this and any other program of Caring Connections on WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Be sure to email questions to caring at 1360wchl.com. Caring Connections is a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.